Was that the professional picture that came back of you and Neil? Yeah, it
Yeah,
was a great photo. Great photo.
really good.
You texted me that picture and then you put like laughing face or something like, I mean, and then it was like laughing face. And I'm like, I can't see anything wrong with this photo. I don't know what your problem is.
I read the crying face.
Welcome to Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism Podcast. We are Jen, Kim, Rachel, and Jamie. Take a seat at our table as we share with hope, humor, and honesty. Hello, thank you for joining us today as we continue our Waving the White Flag series. Today, we're going to be talking about coping. Before we get going, we just want to give all of you listeners a huge thank you. We have gone through a lot of changes in the last few months, and we appreciate everyone sticking with us and those of you who have recently joined us. On that note, if you have anyone in your life who might enjoy or benefit from our podcast, please let them know about us. It really helps our podcast. Also, if you give us a follow on whatever podcasting app you use, or multiple, if you use multiple. And also, please remember to follow us on social media. As some of you might have seen, we've recently started putting our podcast as a podcast up on YouTube. So you can also listen to us there. And that also gives you access to us through YouTube Music. So if you haven't listened through there, or if that's easier for you, we are on YouTube now.
Maybe you could share to teachers and therapists too, because we would just love to have more people know about the inner side of our family.
Yes, that's a very good point. Not only is it a good way to learn more about our families and what we kind of go through and how we function, but they can also recommend it to clients and other people who might benefit. So yeah. All right. We're going to talk about coping and really how it kind of applies to mental health, like this series we've been talking about, and also our lives as parents to children on the spectrum. And we'll kind of just discuss how we cope. We're going to first talk about some of the healthier ways to cope. And then later on, we'll kind of discuss maybe some of the not so healthy ways to cope. So I came up with a list of ideas that I've pulled from different places online of what are some healthier ways to cope. So I thought I could list some of those and we can maybe talk about that. One of my favorites is building a support network, which, you know, it's like what we've done here. This is why we came together. I think we were all in a much different place. Holy crap. 4 years ago? 3 years ago?
I know.
How long have we known each other? Three?
It's like three and a half, I believe. Yeah.
So I think September, all of us met in September.
Oh, so we all came together in 2020. Me finding the support group through Finding Cooper's Voice was really my first delve into like a support group whatsoever. My son was diagnosed right at the very end of 2019. I wasn't even ready, I think, looking back at all, to go to like an in-person support group. And then obviously 2020 happened and those things didn't exist anymore, which drove me to more online. And man, it really, really helped me. Like I always say, it saved me in a lot of ways, but it just put a lot of things in perspective.
It's been essential for me. I mean, we talk about it here like it's easy. And I want to acknowledge that it isn't necessarily easy to take that leap and to like follow through and to show up at the thing or to make the time on Thursdays for that call. But it's really worth it. It really is worth it. Friendship takes work and building a network does too. And like staying vulnerable and not judging and helping and like, I don't know, looking forward and reaching back is something powerful when you feel like you're stuck. It's really made all the difference. I will say, when I recently was in treatment for my mental health, group therapy is one of the most successful approaches for the largest group of people. So obviously we talk a lot about in our podcast and as a friend group that like we aren't necessarily the cookie cutter, this works for everybody kind of families, but it really is important to have people where you can keep it real, you know?
Cliche as it sounds, it's been life changing. I mean, especially when you're on this path that you don't know anyone else in your friend or family that has a child like ours. So to fall into sort of these friendships, which like Rachel said, they're a lot of work. We're doing it via the internet most times, but to find people that, you know, Rachel was the first person I met that had another little girl. She calls her a Hellcat. I think it's the best thing ever, but to have another kid like mine that self-injured and went through bouts of aggression and all of those things. And it was kind of like, oh, I'm not crazy. I mean, I am, but you know, finding
we are together now.
I mean, we're together now, but finding that in other people makes you feel less alone. It's just that
absolutely simple. Like we, but Jen and I are a country apart and are like a big distance in age and maturity and struggle. Whoa, like,
hang on a second. It's not
our girls. Jesus. Settle. Our girls have an age difference. Christ almighty.
I think too, one of the heaviest burdens that we feel as parents going through life with a child with a disability or a special need is the isolation.
Yes.
It just can feel so heavy. It's really hard for people to understand, although they try, and this is a big reason why we do this in our other platforms, to understand. You really can't fully understand it. And just that feeling of being alone is so isolating, you know, and sometimes it causes you to withdraw from friends and family because they are just not understanding your situation. And you feel like you're being a burden on people by, like, you know, kind of talking it when they're really not understanding it. And it's like, then they're pitying you and it's like, you don't necessarily want the pity either, but it's just, you know, it's just so complicated. And I think defining the support of other people that go through what you go through really negates that isolation, even virtually, like just having someone who can like really understand or really be able to like understand how huge this one is, or like just know how hurtful something is, you know, that happens or that's said to you or whatever it is, without feeling bad for you, but just really knowing that they understand what you're going through is just so, so huge. Like, I really think that changes everything.
Well, I also don't think people understand the isolation, and I sort of try to explain it and I get a little snarky, which is so unlike me. But, you know, people complaining about COVID, oh, we're stuck in our house. Oh, hey, welcome to autism. You know, I was like, and this is, and I'm using it as an example, because you literally are stuck in your house. There's weeks at a time where my daughter would not live outside of our home. Like, she wouldn't leave the home. So that part of COVID really wasn't any different for us.
But it gives us common ground with the people that lived through the COVID experience for them.
Yes.
That we can be like, No, friend. It's like that. Are in lockdown. Like, saying lockdown to someone now versus like, I feel pretty isolated. Sounds like making some choices in friendship. Like, the same people that I would tell I feel isolated are the people that I'm also saying no to social plans from. And they don't get that I'm like saying that because in case shit, or because we can't possibly after 3 p.m. or because I can't make it 14 miles or because fill in the blank.
Or because you can't fake it, right? Like,
yeah.
There's so many times when it's like,
yeah,
it's like you just, and you don't want to be out there sometimes. You just don't have the energy to put that fake smile on your face and just kind of like go through the motions when like you're not feeling it in your heart. Like, it's so hard.
Yeah.
I also feel like there's no place like shoulder to shoulder where you can, like shoulder to shoulder in the situation that we've built, that you can understand the dynamic between it could go bad and it didn't. Where in relation to in a relationship where it's like me and someone in a typical family or whatever, like in the typical world, when they see something not happen, like Celie doesn't have a meltdown or she doesn't get off the bus like a hellcat, it's like I'm crying wolf. Like, it's like, it just further validates that, like, oh, nothing is happening and they're okay. And like, oh, everything was fine that day and they were really worked up about what could happen.
Yeah.
Like, there's an outcome after this that you didn't see. Like, we skated out of there 55 minutes early because she lost her shit in the car. I don't want you to see that. I don't want, but like, I can get home having been kicked in the head while I'm driving. If I called the people I was with, they'd be like, oh, nothing happened. That was great. She did great. And you guys would be like, oh my God, I understand. At least you made it to the car. You know?
That's such a big thing. And I want to say too, sometimes, you know, we've been able to meet each other online. We're all super comfortable. Obviously, we're doing it right now. Talking online, talking through Zoom, all that kind of stuff. I mean, really before 2020, I didn't even want to FaceTime people. I thought it was so weird. And now it's like, whatever. So now sometimes like that, that building that support network doesn't mean it's people, parents of children with autism. Sometimes it's people already in your life and just educating them. And like, I want to say, I appreciate the people listening to this podcast right now who don't directly have a child or a sibling or something on the spectrum or with a disability. Like the fact that you're listening to this, probably because you're supporting in some way someone who does have a child like that. Like, amen. I think that's also amazing because, you know, I know people in my extended family who listen to the podcast and like just understand me so much better or understand our life so much better. So they are a better support network for our family than before, because like Jen always says, even us, we just didn't know before. And so we probably would have made judgments too of like, oh, you should just do this, or you should, you know, like, I think I have, I mean, I'm and looking back in my life as like a teenager, I probably did make those judgments on parents. I saw out that we're doing stuff like, oh my gosh, just tell your kid to stop. You know, I encourage people to tell them, hey, listen to this podcast or read this book, and it will help you understand autism more. And so you can be that support network for people. I have like on my page personally, I don't know why I have so many like grandmothers that follow me of like, I love a grandma. Their grandchild has the disability. And I love that. Like they're trying so hard and they always message me like, oh my gosh, my grandson does this. And it's just them trying to learn. And I freaking love it.
Honestly, it's my favorite when I get a grandma comment, and I have a couple grandmas on my supporter page. And seriously, it's like, you are a grandparent going out of their way to really learn and absorb and understand autism. And I just think it's pretty cool.
Because we also hear the opposite a lot of people of that generation who do who are not understanding to their...
My mom and I talk about it all the time. Obviously, I had two grandmothers and both would have loved Kaya, but one would not have been accepting of the autism and one would have been right down on the ground with it. Like the grave difference in how they would have been with her, you know, one would have been maybe more a little embarrassed of the stimming, the noises, because that's just not her, you know, where my other grandma would have been like, my nanny would have been like, hey, let her go, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's that generation. I think you're right, James.
I see a lot of grandparents that say it's like their kids aren't ready to necessarily find these online support things and follow these pages yet. So they're kind of doing it. They're like testing the waters for their children, which I think is pretty cool. Like, you know, because maybe the parent hasn't quite like, isn't quite there yet.
I do think that that is really a neat thing where you can see a person's network build before they even join it, you know?
So that kind of goes along with one of the other tips, open communication. So having that open environment with your family and people who can understand. And I think obviously that goes with mental health too, which Rachel talked a lot about in the first episode, that, you know, she has certain people she knows who checks in on her. Like we check on Rachel, we check in on each other all the time. Like, especially if we know one of us has something coming up, even if like other people might not think it's a big deal, it's nice having people in your life who know that that might be a big deal to you, or that might cause a spiral for you. And so, you know, sometimes even things for me, I don't necessarily tell you guys that it's going to be hard for me, but one of you will check in just assuming, or just in case this is going to be hard for you. So I think having that open communication with people around you in both of these situations, whether it's your mental health or, you know, the struggles, I mean, which is connected, the struggles you're having as a parent.
I also think like there's power in numbers. You know, for us, it takes the group. It isn't that I have time to check in on any one of you all the time. It's that I do well, I'm dropping the ball. I know that Jamie is. And when Jamie's dropping it, because she's busy, that Jen is. And like, it goes, like our web crosses all the lines where I'll reach out to Jen. And if I don't know about Kim, Kim has heard from, or Jen has heard from Kim or whatever it is. Like, but in that we have to keep it open. Like, well, you can't get hurt because somebody's talking, or like, it's just never worth losing the network and the friendship that we've built and the group that we have.
The flip side of that, of the checking in and when we're down, is having this community allows us to share the amazing things our kids do, and you get it. So when I tell you Kaya tried a raspberry today, I mean, you're all jumping up and down and everyone's excited. And if I was, you know, and nothing against my typical friends, you know, but if I told someone she had a raspberry, they'd look at me like I was drunk. Like, so what, she had a raspberry? You know what I mean? It's just a very different, our highs and lows are, you know, our highs are as high as they get and our lows are as low as they get. And so to have people there that can ride that roller coaster with you because they're on the same roller coaster.
And that's another part of it too, Jen.
Life changing.
It's like the ups and downs that we go through are just, they're just so hot. They're just, it's a lot sometimes. It's a lot. And then you have smooth sailing for a while. And then all of a sudden there's like this huge drop. And I think that's what also confuses other people because they'll be like, no, like I, you were just at so-and-so and she was great. She's happy. She seems fine. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, but you weren't at school the other day when she was throwing herself into a van and when she whacked her arms on the door frame so many times, she has a bruise all across her forearm. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's just like these highs and lows. And it's like, I know I have people that I'll share stuff with and they're like, oh, that's so great. Yeah. But like, you can see in their face that they don't understand. They don't understand why that's so great. This like thing that's small, but huge at the same time. You know, I think that that just makes it hard.
I thought of this earlier and I forgot to say it too, is the support network you build too, they don't have to be your best friends. You know, right. I didn't say that coming from a group of friends, but me and Bree talked about it in the friendship episode I did for Sit Down, There's More. We talked about how we all met all these women and, you know, we joke, mostly Kimmy, a lot about how we wouldn't really be friends probably in real life if autism didn't connect us, but we are. She's stuck with us. We're all stuck with each other. But like some of these women, we, you know, I don't talk to them even probably on a monthly basis, but I know for a fact that I could drop in one of those groups. Like me and Brie talked about, like, hey, I'm having a really hard time. Can someone talk? And there's at least 10 women that would probably be like, hey, give me a call. So like finding that like common denominator with people doesn't mean you have to have everything else in common. And
right.
You know, like there's women in this life that like, I would never know them probably, but we have this one thing in common and you can relate on that in so many ways. Like, and which is and nice.
Use your differences to connect you and like keep it fresh because really like the friendship did not get to this level because of autism alone. It's because one of us is granola. One of us is meditating. One of us is like, what are you talking about? One of us is who leaves the house. Like there's always all these different dynamics to everything. And like, that hasn't been off-putting because we still have this common denominator, you know?
But I think I'm also saying like, you know, having people in your life who are just there to kind of talk about that parenting stuff is also okay. Like,
Yeah.
Just having someone, and especially, I feel like that happens to me a lot more locally where it's like both of us, you know, don't have time to go out to the movies or hang out on girls' nights and all that stuff. But like meeting up for lunch every once in a while just to be like, oh my gosh, where are you finding a good therapist? Where are you doing this? Or I can't take this or this. It's really nice to have those connections, whether online or not. And also, like, I am a very awkward person. It's so hard for me to put myself out there at all. But I really encourage if anyone out there is feeling really isolated, find someone. It will make the world of difference to not feel like you're
alone. Well, but someone that can laugh at the jokes too. You know what I mean? Like we can make fun of our situations and our kids and ourselves and like other people would be horrified because they like wouldn't know what to say, you know? And it's just, you got to get through it with some humor sometimes because otherwise.
How much poop have we laughed at? How many like public meltdowns do you like talk, like you get to talk trash about the lady that was staring at you because you have friends that you can discuss the moment with, like instead of just crying for 4 days of it. Yeah. The funny is gold.
Well, yeah. Friendship it's like, you can just say those like off, I don't know the right word to describe it, but like other people might be like what, you know, because we're just laughing at our situation because it's like, it's not funny at the time that it's happening, but like, you know, when we're like, well, yeah, no wonder why Jesse did this because he's thinking exactly this. And then, you know, we all find that funny or whatever at the time. It wasn't maybe funny at the time that it was happening.
Wasn't funny at the moment.
Exactly.
Okay, another thing, this talks about having a mantra or coping statements. And Rach just put some of these in our chat. But it talks about having something to say to yourself or being able to talk yourself through a stressful or hard moment in order to cope. So some examples of this, I know we mentioned a lot in the first episode of the series, like the whole idea of like, for me, sometimes it does help to say like, and I don't know if this is healthy or not, like, it could be worse, or there are harder things that people are going through, you know? And I think I talked about sometimes that doesn't help me, but other times it kind of does.
I agree with that too, yeah. Because sometimes it makes you feel guilty, right? Like, you know what I mean? Because you're so upset.
Like, holy.
I have a mantra that's on my wall that has been, like, through a moment of crisis with me, for sure. I've got lots of things on my wall, but this one on my bedroom wall says, she is brave and tomorrow needs her, so she stayed. And then later I learned, and she learned to trust herself, because I have felt so lost. And every day when I wake up, it's there. Every time I walk past to get dressed, it's there. I even touch it, like Harry Potter and his scar, like when I'm struggling. I don't know. There's something about that repetitive thing, like how when Celia is struggling, I tell myself constantly that it's temporary. There's just something in that, like, validation, even though you're just minding yourself to, like, whatever, get through, use your tools.
We have a motto. Yeah, too. Not so much. It's improvise, overcome, and adapt. That's and I think that's like the Marines, or I don't know which one it is, but I didn't, we've always said that. And then, like, I found out it came from there, and I'm like, that actually makes a lot of freaking sense, because it's like, we're literally in the trenches sometimes.
It's true, though. One of my favorite things to do, I'm looking at the list Rachel sent me, and this is something I actually do. And sometimes, not all the time, but I should do more, is I'll make a list of, like, okay, these are my concerns. What can I control? And people tell me this all the time with my anxiety, and it's a lot harder than just saying it. But to try to let go of the things that are out of your control, sometimes I'm really good about that. For some reason, when my family has, like if a car breaks down, or, you know, something goes crazy wrong at the house, I'm really good at compartmentalizing that, where I can be like, I can't, you know, like, all I can do is call the people. I'm going to have a huge bill for this. There's not much else I can do.
Yeah. Like, well, it's making flooded, a list whatever. Of like,
yeah. But like, for the little things, okay, these are the steps that I can take to control at least something in this situation. And sometimes that's making a call. Sometimes that's having my husband make a call. Sometimes that's just like, okay, I'm going to just clean my room so I can think clearly, you know, kind of stuff like that. Some others, I can't change what has already happened. What Rach just said, the situation is temporary. Just because I'm thinking something does not make it true. This hurts, so I need to be extra kind towards myself.
Isn't that the sweetest thing you ever heard?
Yeah, I'm not good at
that. I'm never that nice to her.
I don't know about this one. I prefer something else, but I can deal with this too. You know, with my daughter, we've been working on, like, with all the stuff she has to do, is that I can do hard things. And, you know, like, and I'm always like, I'm like, I don't want to do hard things, but we can do hard things. So it's just reminding ourselves.
I think it's interesting to, so many of us are trained in a lot of skill sets to help our children, like tracking, or what's triggering them, or what's the antecedent to this? And I've said this 100 times, and I don't mean to just like beat this dead horse, but knowing that you can use Celia's skills on a Rachel, like, it just turns out that I have big dysregulated feelings just like my daughter. So, like, taking a breath and like taking her out, like walking outside, or flipping and reversing the whole routine of things, like whatever it is, a lot of the things that I've learned over the past 3 or 4 months have been the stuff that I know for her, you know, that's like, take a deep breath, look at something positive, look at baby badgers on the YouTube. I mean, who can't get happy looking at those little baby creatures?
Mine's the red panda.
Exactly.
Red pandas are so cute. I know. I think we've talked about that on the podcast before. It's like how I've learned so much about my own self-regulation through all my son's stuff. Like,
well, that is very bold of you. I compartmentalized that shit to just silly lessons and left myself out of that personal growth.
Oh, in the moment though, I ain't thinking, I'm just pissed or whatever, or sad or mad. I'm not good about it in the moment. But it's funny because when our kids are in their moments, we're like, okay, let's try a deep breath. And they're like, I'm gonna slap you.
What tools do you want to use?
And then, like, one of the biggest ones is obviously seeking professional help, which we always say, doing what you can in that, talking to someone about. And sometimes it's just, you know, doing those 3 therapy sessions that your insurance will cover. Sometimes that person can give you some of those tools to help you cope, you know?
So. I thought it was cool to listen to Betsy in our last episode in this series discuss how, as a NAMI advocate, which is a national organization, and like they have such a huge network that sometimes she would just have to tell people there's not a dang resource there. But it turns out the connection that she made gave enough hope or gave enough insight, or like in so many situations, you can learn one word and find out this whole trove of information because you thought about something a different way. You know, like if you're going down one path and then you learn some other diagnosis or some other way to phrase something, it can be so insightful.
And one thing I was reading about was they call it coping strategies can be distinguished as active or passive. Have you guys heard of that? So like active coping strategies are like approach to the problem, and they're more positive and you will reach resolutions quicker. Mm-hmm. While passive coping strategies is like avoiding the problem, and it can be a mechanism to reduce the stress short term, but not necessarily long term, which I think is like, even though like intellectually I know this, but like reading it, it's like, wow, there's terms for this and everything. Like, it's like, that's crazy because we all do that. You know, sometimes you do the thing to like relieve the stress in the moment, but that's not necessarily going to fix the problem.
I feel like money is such a good example of that. Like if I want to not think about money, I can blah, blah, blah. But if I want to solve a money problem, it's going to be a long-term solution. Like it's going to be.
Well, this is specifically with dealing with special needs parenting. Like you'd like cope by not sometimes dealing with it and finding ways to like escape from it, which sometimes I feel like is very needed in the moment, but it doesn't always like help the situation. The situation is still there when you're, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hiding in the garage, eating cookies. That's not
solving
them. So on that note, we thought we would talk a little bit about maybe some, I don't know, perhaps perceived unhealthy ways that we cope in different situations.
I would give a shout out to one of our listeners who brought up this idea to us at a retreat that some of us were at, discussing like that it could be shopping, it could be drinking, it could be oversleeping, it could be lack of sleeping. For me, I'm drinking a glass of wine right now. My cheeks are pink through it. But I'm like, my biggest vice is that I'm a smoker. So I like will go outside about it, take a moment, and it helps in many ways. And then, you know, it's also not the best choice for me. But it gives me a second. It gives me like a cool down. It gives me a big, toxic, polluted, deep breath, whatever.
She's taking that deep breath somehow. It's hard because, you know, unhealthy coping can be a spectrum of things, and it can be very serious or it can be less serious. And some of those things, like little silly things, I probably am on TikTok way too often to like escape. I don't know if you guys know this from listening to our podcast, but probably food. We really bonded over queso.
Food hits for us, yes.
But for me, a lot in high school, I would do like the oversleep. I mean, I would oversleep just because I was a teenager, but literally to escape from things when I was going through a hard mental health time, I remember I would just like, I'm like, I'm just going to sleep. So time like disappears. I feel like a lot of people do that. I know in our life situations, that's not always even possible because children and stuff. But like really things like staying up too late when I should be sleeping, but it's just to get that escape because.
Oh, that's a big one for me.
Yeah. But I feel like I almost need it because when I am working on being better about getting more sleep, but it's like when I'm going and it's like, wake up, get the kids ready, go, go, go throughout the day, work, dinner, bath, bed, start over again, over and over and over again. That monotony for me drives me insane. Like I've never been a good person at having like a 9-to-5 desk job where I go to the same place. Like I've always worked in like catering, film, restaurants, places where like every day is kind of the same, but also different. Like the day after day can really drive me up the wall. I can't do it. So for me, it's like those little breaks I need somehow. I could probably be healthier in the way of like, okay, maybe I stay up an hour on my own. But also for us, it's different because we've talked about this before. Like my son sleeps less than most children. So a lot of my friends are like, oh yeah, I get the kids bed at 7. Then I have like 7 to 10 on my own. Wake up. And I'm like, no, my life is usually get my son to bed, stay up way too late just to be alone or, you know, hang out with my husband and just have a little time. And then he's up before us, most of the time. So it's like, I'm never without my kid. So it's just different.
I was literally sitting on the couch. It was Saturday night and I was so tired. It was like 7 p.m. That's wild. I just wanted to like have a glass of wine, watch TV. The house is quiet. But I really got to the point where I'm like, I am so freaking tired. I am just going to go to bed. like, I can't fight it anymore. I have to go to bed. But it's that wanting to set downtime of like,
it's like decompression. You know?
When we were in an adoption process, I did a lot of like shopping to cope. And I felt like I was nesting, or like I was just getting out of my house. And like, you know, back before you have kids, when you can spend money because you have nothing to do, like those are two crazy things that I can hardly recall. But I used to spend, like I used to just new bath towels. Like it was like dumb shit that you don't even leave life with. It's just what I did for a minute. Then I quit my job to do this life, and you stop spending.
I used to take the kids to the mall because Neil worked constant. I was home with them.
It's cold.
And the first thing the early intervention lady said was, you bring her to the mall? And I go, yeah. And they're like, and she does fine. And I go, I mean, she was fine until you stopped. You just had to like kind of keep going. It never for one second clicked in my head to not do that. Like, I was like, no, I got to get out of this house. So like, I would literally bring her and Neil to the mall by myself. Like now I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know how I did that. That's youthful parenting. You were
19. Fresh.
And, I mean, closer to 22, 23. But, and then I would go to the mall. I'd have my Macy's credit card because we didn't have any money because I wasn't working. Neil was only working or whatever credit cards I had. And I'd come home with these bags of clothes and I'd hide them. And one day little Neil's like, Neil comes in and he goes, oh, you're going to kill mommy. And he goes, why? He goes, oh, wait, do you see what she bought? Because what I would say is like, daddy's going to kill me. Daddy's going to kill me. He ratted me out. But yeah, I feel like it's like, that's probably just like impulse. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, it's like stress relief. And you just have like the impulse.
You're also filling a void with some.
Yes.
Mashgosh bagosh.
Let me tell you, the fulfillment of a package coming to your door several times a week is not good money wise, but there was something about it. You're like, ooh, something I ordered.
It feels free until it's not.
it also is like ask, believe, receive. Like you're like, ooh, I want. Oh,
well, let me tell you, I got an Amazon MasterCard because they suck you into that, right? But and it's like if you spend X amount of money, you get like these $20 goes right into your Amazon account. And let me tell you, I'm getting those far too often, which means I'm spending too much money.
Well, COVID was a killer for that, right? Because you were like, or we were up like all hours of the night. And then for some reason, like your impulse, like part of your brain, like does not work properly. Like after a certain time, like after 1 a.m, it just like goes to trash. And you're like, oh yeah,
I should go to lightning deals.
Oh, that's fun. Let me sign up for this. I absolutely need this thing right here. I'm just going to get this.
Did you ever wake up in the morning and you get a notification? Your Amazon order is shipped. You're like, what the f*** did I buy?
Yes.
Gotta go back and look. Like, oh, I did not need that.
Oh, it's also like, you're like, to help me rest. Perfect.
The price looks so much better online. I got this for $14. It was such a good deal. Then you go to like Target and it's like $10 and you're like, oh, well.
Or it's like a mini version of what you thought it was. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's why this was a good deal. Cause it's like, I'm so bad at looking at like measurements of stuff. So then I get it and I'm like, oh, this is not.
Do you guys remember when I thought I found the only pool in the United States during the COVID-19 and it showed up smaller than Eddie, the dog? I was like, I finally got the last inflatable pool. And it was basically not.
Well, it's like when I thought I was ordering a set of like fake flowers for this cute little vase I had, and it was one flower. Did I show you guys?
Here's a
list of things that are unhealthy. Some of these, you know, like I was saying, there's more extremes of these. There's lesser of these. Substance abuse, avoidance and denial, one of my favorites. Self-harm, isolation, emotional eating, escapism, traitors, Harry Potter.
Yep.
Risky behavior. For real. Self-blame, negative self-talk. We're all really good at that. Overworking, overexertion, and then escaping reality through fantasy. So,
and like not coming out of your car when you pull up to the driveway. I used to be big on that. They'd be like, Mom, we saw that you were home like a while ago. Like, what were you doing? And I'm like, absolutely nothing.
Oh my gosh.
I was on a driveway vacay. Shut up.
They were calling that my office for a while.
So when my brother lived with us for a little while, I think when they had their second child, And he would go to work all day, be up, you know, helping my sister-in-law with the baby all night. So he was like exhausted, but all the time he would pull into the driveway and just like go to like rest his eyes for a moment and he would fall asleep. And I was like, if you were my husband, I've been here alone with the baby all day. You come here.
It's but your we would
also like to make fun of him.
Also, get smart. We all have the Find My iPhone on. You need to do that in the work parking lot so it looks like you're solving problems, not just resting in my freaking premises.
Well, Neil's done that several times before Find My iPhone was a thing. And like, he actually had the cops like bang on his window because he was sleeping in Stop and Shop parking lot, the grocery store parking lot. They're like, sir, sir, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm just tired.
I have four kids.
I have four kids, three jobs.
I have a Kimmy.
Exactly. Exactly.
But also with all these things, I think there's, you know, some of these become dangerous, but it's like, you know, some of these things, like, I think escapism sometimes can be a good way to cope. It's like going too far with it. Or, you know, like having something that you enjoy, you know, like having, you know, if you want to have a bowl of ice cream once a week to like, or every night a week, whatever, to like enjoy something in life, then freaking eat that ice cream. You know, it's like, it's.
Yeah, with a big spoon.
Yeah. And well, so identifying the things in our lives that have gone too far, that it's like, okay,
That's what it is. Anything in excess becomes a problem. Yeah. Right. You know, it's like you've got to find that balance of to like allow yourself the time. Like, you know, my big thing always was TV. I just like escape into like TV shows and stuff like that. Like, it's just, I don't really do that anymore. But for a long time, like, I would do that. But I mean, that really doesn't hurt anybody else. But I mean, unless like the kids are running around hanging from the rafters and you're just ignoring them. But like, yeah.
Less typical for your kid to hang from the rafters. Step off for that judgment.
So a way I can kind of do that is leave myself room for those breaks, or like today. So my kids have been on spring break. Today was their last official day of spring break. So I didn't do much like actual work because I was like, this is my last day of not like drop off this, that. And so I was like, okay, I needed to make this appointment. I did need to do a little bit of work. So I did those things. And I was like, okay, now I can watch like some of my show. So I watched a couple episodes of my show, let my kids just have screen time for a while. I'm like, whatever.
Which episodes?
The new episodes are just
we'll
really
talk screwed. Later.
I've got a problem, you guys. I'm really screwed because this is the last one, I think. But because,
like we said, losing yourself in a TV show is one thing, but disassociating like Rachel and Jamie for Traitors is a whole ass other thing.
But like picking and choosing those things I do, because I think like we talked a lot about in the self-love series, it's like sometimes we feel like we have to go extreme either way. It's like, you know, not to go back to the eating thing, but it's like, I either am eating crap or I'm eating super healthy and I'm trying to do this. But sometimes trying to like keep the perfect schedule, make sure I'm doing this and this right, I get burnt out so easily. And then I like fall down and then I'm doing all these things in different ways and different levels. So I don't know. That's what helps me, is just trying to find a freaking balance, which I know sometimes you don't. And just like with our kids, it's setting ourselves up. So like we teach our kids all these freaking deep breaths and all these meditations and all stuff. So when they are having a really hard time, they have those tools, like practicing these tools all the time, so that when we are in a funk or a really hard time, we can go to these things. Sorry, Rich.
Then it's almost a lifestyle, not like a thing we have to do. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And there's like moms that we've talked to that even will say like, even the drinking, like it's like you kind of drink to cope, but like, when does that cross a line? You know what I mean? Like when is that too much? So it's like, because all those problems are still there. Like that's, I think, the problem with using these things as a means of escape. It's because you're not dealing with sometimes something that like needs to be dealt with, and that thing is still looming over you. You know, I never remember to do anything. I've been trying to change Alyssa's bath house for like 4 weeks now, and like it's like I forget, or they're closed, or I'm like, oh, I can't deal with being on the phone with them for an hour today. And then MassHealth will also tell me that I can't change her MassHealth plan because they have to talk to her, even though she doesn't talk. And it doesn't matter that she's nonverbal, they can only talk to her. And I'm like, so there's just so much to do sometimes and so many calls to make, and
yeah,
it just feels like you can never keep up and you can never like remember to do all the things you need to do, and then you feel like an ass because like you still have not done X, Y, and Z. But like, you're a bit on TikTok, you've been doing this, you've been watching this show, this movie, you know what I mean? It's like, but you still haven't like made this phone call. So it's just,
I can swindle myself into like believing I'm doing better too. Like in my depression, as I'm struggling, I will convince myself like, oh, it only takes like cleaning one room, like Jamie said, like, oh, maybe I'll have my head on straight if I just clean my space. I mean, but it really almost always turns into like, oh, Rachel cleaned the whole upstairs because she's trying to take control of something while she's spiraling out of control about this other thing. So like, even on good coping, I can kick it into high drive where I'm like, now I'm going to exhaust myself in the other direction, because you cannot mom like this, do dishes every day, do dinner every day, do all these things, do all this stuff, and like have my floors clean. Like I can't actually, there isn't enough Rachel for all that, you know? So when I'm achieving all that, I'm like, oh girl, you're going to make yourself more sick.
Well, I think that's part of the identifying or reaching out to the friend who might not seem like they need help is like, I know people in my life who seem like they're doing great, but sometimes it's like, I'm thinking right now of a friend who's like a workaholic, working all the time. She's taking on the extra hours, extra projects, all this different stuff. And it's gotten to the point where like, she's started to realize that she's doing that as an escape. So while the rest of us, I'm like, man, she's making bank. She must be like a really good worker. She must be passionate about her job. It's really, she's come to find out. She's like, I'm just trying to escape these other things in my life. And so I'm doing that because I don't want to like go through, you know, the process of dealing with those things mentally. And some of those things, you know, she can't control. And so I think for a lot of us, it's so much about control because we feel so out of control of our lives sometimes that honestly, sometimes just like finishing a book, I'm like, you know what? At least I freaking controlled that one thing in my life, was reading this entire book or whatever. All right. Well, thank you for joining us. You know, send us a message of how you cope, what healthy or not. We would love to hear it. Mm-hmm. We'll catch you guys next time for a storytellers episode. We're going to be talking about moms and mental health, and then we'll have No Res coming up. And make sure to join us on Thursdays for Sit Down, There's More. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Talk Like a Mother Parenting Autism podcast. If you are enjoying our podcast, make sure to rate and review us wherever you listen. And if you'd like to support us, you can become a subscriber. Just check out the description of this episode. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram for more content, and we'll see you next time.